The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, Confidants. Just before we start this episode, I wanted to let you know that this episode with the Pleasure Collective was recorded a few weeks ago. So in the beginning, you're going to hear us coincidentally talking about the Roe v. Wade leak, which then we saw subsequently turned into the overturning just this past week. And so just for context, that's why we are talking about it in that sort of tense. But I think the information still is really relevant and useful. I'm also dealing with a little bit of a cold. It's a sinus infection turned into bronchitis. I've been testing for COVID every single day for over a week now, and on PCRs and rapids. I just can't get through this nasty thing. And I've got Hippo, the foster dog, with me, who is breathing very intently in the background. Would you like to breathe into this? Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, Confidants, enjoy this episode.
Hello, Confidants. Woo, my pleasurable, collected community, trauma-informed, safe, based Confidants. Welcome to Confidently Insecure, the podcast where we're absolutely sure we don't know everything. I am your host, Kelsey Dara, and this week, get your blankies, get your cozy mugs, get in the safe, soft space, because we are talking to our guests this week who are therapists, sex educators, who also just happen to be best friends, who we love that, besties. They have built a community to heal sexual traumas called the Pleasure Collective. They also host a ton of different really like niche specific cute workshops, often on via Zoom. So you guys are going to get tons of information on their workshops coming up. I want to see all y'all beautiful faces there. This week, we welcome to the podcast Anya Like Lasagna and Hannah Like Banana. Your official government names.
Yay, I love it.
That's on my driver's license.
You guys, thank you so much for coming on the podcast this week. I want to dive all into the Pleasure Collective itself, obviously, and the community you guys have built. But before we do that, I just feel like I got two therapists here, two trauma-informed therapists. I want to use my resources while I got them to talk just about briefly what's been happening across our country with this abortion ban. You know, from the Supreme Court hearing to the shit that's happening in Oklahoma, that's been happening in Texas. You know, even the crazy conversations around people who have embryos on ice at fertility clinics and people that might get their IUDs pulled because it's now considered a form of intercepting intercessive. What the fuck is going on, you guys? This feels like a anticipatory trauma, and I'm just trying to navigate like where and how we should all be feeling and dealing right now.
Yeah. So for everybody who's okay, classic trauma therapist move. Can we just like take a breath?
Yes, please. You want to lead us?
I have just like noticed that when I am talking about reproductive health, when I am talking about, you know, the state of the world, I forget to breathe and I find myself breathing really shallowly. And so maybe this is self-serving, but let's just like inhale through our noses and fill up our bellies with air and just like sigh that shit out. Like, let it go. Because it's hard to be a person, especially a person with a uterus right now, or a person who loves people who have uteruses.
I guess my question is like there's a rare opportunity here where we got this insight into what the world might look like. You know, we've got a lot of pre-warning, mm-hmm. but even with that, it doesn't feel like we can stop much. It doesn't feel like the power is in the hands of us. It feels so bigger and out of our reach, but yet people are still protesting. People are still making noise. We're still actively trying to stop this thing. And it feels like another trauma on top of another, like, already global trauma, right? Like, we just went through the pandemic, and it's like we're not getting a breath. And when we're talking about, like, reproductive rights, and yeah, ironically, we just took that nice, beautiful breath. Is there something to a healthy way to cope with this anticipatory nerves and anger?
Yeah. Okay. So, totally hear you on those feelings of powerlessness, right? We are not, like, we're kind of stuck, and that's a really shitty feeling, and it's a really scary feeling. I can swear, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought, but then I just had a moment. I think one of the first things for me, and this is, you know, as a white person with, like, a little bit of disposable income, is, like, looking at places locally that are providing abortion care and also are providing transportation for people who have to go out of state to access abortion. So, I live in Colorado, which means that all of the states surrounding Colorado have trigger laws except for New Mexico. So in the event that Roe's actually overturned, abortion will become illegal in Texas, in Oklahoma, in Wyoming, I think in Kansas. But what that means is that Colorado is about to get a flood of people seeking reproductive health care, seeking abortion specifically. And so a great way for folks to help or offer support to folks who will be getting abortions, because it's still going to happen, is donating money to local abortion funds instead of big places like Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood, a lot of that, like, it's great. They do a lot of really important work. They provide a lot of really important abortions, but places like locally that offer transportation cost support and things like that are going to be the most important places that we can put our dollars right now. So that's like a tangible thing. It also doesn't necessarily make anybody feel better.
Monetarily.
It's a drop in the bucket. Right. I think the other thing is really surrounding ourselves in community that's going to affirm our own existence and the fact that, like, we get to choose how to treat our bodies, when to become parents, when not to become parents. So that might mean seeking out a therapist. It might mean surrounding your, like, curating your social media. Mm-hmm. So that the people in your social media feeds are affirming and validating of your lived experience and of your bodily autonomy. It might mean setting some really rough, rigid boundaries with folks. Mm-hmm. And all of those things are okay and encouraged. And, like, that, those are things that Anya and I talk about all the time. So we'll probably discuss them more later. But the other thing that I think is really important to keep in mind is that the way that we talk about this really, really, like, God, white people are really good at telling on ourselves right now. Really, really good at showing our privilege and externalizing this problem. So, and maybe this is just, like, a hill I'll die on because I can't get through to my father about this, but, like, stop comparing it to The Handmaid's Tale, dude. We are erasing lived experiences of Black and Brown and Indigenous people in our communities when we fictionalize this story, because that's what the reality is. And so I think it's really important that, in addition to, like, supporting each other and taking care of ourselves, we also just really need to be mindful of how we talk about reproductive health. Don't fictionalize it. Don't, like, put it in a box where it's just women who are getting abortions, right? It's really important that our most marginalized community members know that our abortion advocacy, our reproductive justice includes them.
Beautifully said. Anya, anything you want to add?
Well, I think what's hitting me so much and it is what's coming to light is like sex is supposed to be, it, you know, only serves one purpose. And it is not for pleasure. And it is only for procreation. And that is kind of how Pleasure Collective started. And we might get into that later.
No, that was such a beautiful segue. Keep going.
Oh, lovely.
Way to go, Anya.
Thank you. Totally planned that out. Hannah and I were noticing that, like, through our work with domestic violence and interpersonal violence survivors and through our own trauma healing journey, like, sex was shied away from. Like, it was only, you were only deserving of sex, or you were only supposed to be having sex if, like, you had maybe gone through these other trauma healing steps, or you were this far in your healing journey, which to us seemed like such a huge disservice. Because it completely disregards, like, the weapon that was, like, used against survivors. And, like, sex and sexuality is also such, like, a huge focal point of somebody's existence and being. And so now we're also seeing that with these laws and having, you know, Roe possibly being overturned. Like, if you don't want to get pregnant, just don't have sex. Like, don't like that.
It's just not realistic. Right.
It's not realistic. And it doesn't, like, speak to just, like, what sex is. And it continues to put pleasure and erotic energy or just, like, happiness in create barriers around these things and make them completely inaccessible.
Right. I could see, too, how it could be off. It could make people with uteruses even fear sex in these areas, that it could close off a way that, you know, you're taught, you know, have safe sex in school, or, you know, you're told by your religion or your family, but to be told by, like, lawmakers that potentially, like, IUDs would actually be, I don't know what the right term is. I might be overstating, but, like, outlawed, where that's actually interfering with fertilization in the state of Oklahoma, which is where they're saying now life begins, which, like, Jesus fucking Christ. That to me is, like, a trauma in a way that I can't. I have a problem with authority. I'll just say it. I have a big old problem with authority.
Yeah. We do too. Yeah. Like,
welcome to the club.
In a way, like, I'm so grateful and very privileged I've never been arrested, because I think I would, like, I think I would be physically violent with someone if, you know, like, an authoritative figure tried to, you know, handle my body in any way. And it feels like this is a version of that feels so powerless. And I think that perfectly connects with a lot of what the work you guys do with Pleasure Collective, which is healing from trauma, specifically sexual trauma. So do you guys want to give a little bit more background on how this came to be, what it so beautifully is?
Sure. I'll give you the background of our friendship too. Yeah. This is a story that normally Hannah loves to tell, but I'm going to tell from my perspective this time.
I know. I was really excited. So Anya sent, when you sent us the questions, Anya, like, sent them, put them in a Google Doc, and we have, like, you know, we broke them down into who does what, and the roles reversed this time, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited to listen.
Yeah, let's hear it from a new perspective, from a new point of view.
Okay, so.
It's a horror movie instead of a rom-com. It's been, like, told one way.
So Hannah and I went to grad school together. And I was in the process of, like, looking for a new internship. And Hannah comes up to me and basically says, you should intern with me. I think you're great. I think you're really smart. At least that's what I remember her saying. and I've, like, already recommended you to my supervisor. And, like, mind you, at this point, like, Hannah and I had maybe had a few classes together.
We'd had one class together.
Like, we had never had a conversation. So I was also, like, you know, quite intimidated by her. So I was very shocked that she was, like, even talking to me, let alone saying, like, such nice things to me.
Aww, we love that.
I know, isn't it so cute?
Yes, very funny.
I didn't know you were intimidated by me.
You're so smart.
Information comes to light.
So then, of course, we did end up interning together and becoming the best of friends. And part of our, like, final research project involved doing a program evaluation about some program within our internship. So we thought, might as well make it extra difficult on ourselves and create, like, a whole new program to evaluate. Because why not? We're not in grad school and super busy and super stressed or anything. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds great. So that's when we were, like, evaluating, like, the work that we were doing with coaching healthy relationship skills and being interpersonal violence advocates and counselors and, like, looking at curriculum. And what we noticed that was missing was talking about, like, sex and pleasure and sexuality, which is, you know, like I've already said, like, such a huge part of somebody's existence. So why would we dismiss that or say that, like, it's you can only have sex at this point in your healing journey? So we decided to create a curriculum that focused on using one's relationship with sex and with their sexuality as a tool, make it the focal point of their trauma healing journey. So that is how, like, our first workshop was created. And by doing that, we realized, well, one, we work, like, very well together. And we want to do this for the rest of our lives. Uh-huh. So that is how Pleasure Collective was first started. And since then, we have also created workshops around healthy sexual communication and helping loved ones support survivors. And most recently, like, maximizing pleasure within relationships.
I love that. And I have to ask, because you guys are like me, where you have no problem talking about pussies on the internet or, like, sex.
Oh, that's my favorite thing,
like,
to do.
When you Google my name, a vagina just pops up. You know what I mean? Like, and I think...
Oh, my God.
I hope to be like that one day.
Well, I think you might, depending on how this podcast goes. That might be, like, a thumbnail that pops up.
That's my life goal.
Yes. Vaginas. When I was in the Peace Corps and I was teaching sex ed.
When I was in the Peace Corps.
Which is, I mean, don't do it. 0 out of 10 recommend. Anyway, but I was teaching sex ed and I went to, like, the training center to teach the new cohort of volunteers about teaching sex ed. And this person put me in their phone as Hannah Sex Girl.
Yep.
And I am still, to this day, in their phone. As Hannah Sex Girl.
I see it as, like, a title, you know, like how the queen can anoint certain people as knights. Like, I feel very lucky to have that transparency and, you know, I wouldn't even say confidence, because sometimes even, you know, we all falter in our own self-healing and whatever. But I feel like some people, a lot of DMs I get are like, I wish I could talk about sex as openly as you do, whether it be with my partner or my friends. And I don't know where the fuck I got this from, because I was raised pretty religiously. I think it's probably my very liberal mother, but even her and I, you know, once the floodgates did open, we were very conversational about sex, but I don't remember it necessarily being something that was so available to chat about. And I wonder what your guys's advice is for a lot of listeners who just want to be able to own that piece of their dialogue more confidently.
Talk to your friends about pleasure.
Like, we think, like, group chat, like, polls, or, like, Instagram stories. Like, what are we thinking? Brunch conversation?
All of the above, right? If that feels comfy, if, like, talking about it in a virtual setting feels easier, right, to, like, build comfort and, like, familiarity with the language, do it in the group chat. If talking about it at brunch is, like, a fun thing, talk about it at brunch. But practicing using that language in spaces where you already feel safe is a huge, like, it's going to make those words easier to say in general, right? Anya and I can talk about pussies and pleasure and everything in between all the time, every day, pretty much like irrespective of who is around. But that comes with a lot of practice. That comes with a lot of just like saying the words, mm-hmm. right? But we can't say the words if we don't have them yet. So it's also about learning that language and giving yourself permission to be mm-hmm. curious and explore in ways that like just make it commonplace for you to hear things, to hear conversations about pleasure, to hear conversations about likes and dislikes, about body parts. And the more everyday it becomes, the less scary it is to say those words.
I love that. Let's dive into a big expansive word that I saw you guys posting content about recently, which is gender confirming or gender affirming sex. And what is that, and why do we all deserve it?
Well, Anya, do you want where? These weren't on the Google Doc.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was your question.
I add stuff. So Hannah, our lovely producer, usually gives a general outline, and then I go through all your stuff, and I'm like, wait, this is interesting. Ooh, I see this. I don't see this often places, which is, again, everyone should pause this and go follow. Okay. Pleasure Collective, because they talk about stuff that you're not going to see on other sex education social media.
Yeah, come hang out with us. Okay.
Those your posts too, Hannah. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So gender-affirming sex. Basically, so this is – the idea of gender-affirming sex is that we are divesting from the idea that sex is a thing that happens between a man who has a penis and a woman who has a vulva, right? We know that – There are 87,000 different combinations of how we can present and identify and like live in our bodies. And we want sex to be accessible to people who maybe don't fall into those cishet categories. And we want to encourage people to embrace the fact that they don't fall into those cishet categories. And so what that might mean for somebody is to interrogate, you know, ask themselves what language feels comfy. Is it okay if I use the word pussy to describe your vulva? Or is there another word? Can I talk about your breasts? Or do we need to say chest? Can we, like, are there parts of your body that are safe to touch? Are there parts of your body that are off limits that we might think are, like, traditionally, like, okay things to touch during sex? And really where this comes down to really thoughtful, really open, really honest communication. And so if we are having gender-affirming sex, it means that we're factoring in that the person we're having sex with might not experience gender in the same way that we do. Or that the way that they experience gender might mean that they have different boundaries or different likes or different dislikes. And that all of that is like worth celebrating, worth listening to, and worth getting curious about, and worth having conversations with our sex partners so that we can have sex that feels in alignment with our lived experience.
I love that. And I think that that's so important for like the generations right now who do feel the most like confident and exploratory of the language and are the ones like pioneering it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important for like every human to do as well. Like, even if you are like having like cishet sex, like expanding the definition of what sex is just really opens up so many possibilities for joy and pleasure and ecstasy.
I said this to my partner the other day, just like offhandedly. I was like, I'm not having sex with your penis, I'm having sex with your soul. Like, that's why I like a penis is only like,
yeah.
I was about to say tiny part of it, but then I realized how that would sound. He's not even to defend himself. So, but like, it really is. Now I can't not say it. It's like the experience is so much bigger than two genitalia that we have been conditioned to believe
are. Exactly.
And I guess like my question to follow up that such a gorgeous explanation is like, what beyond like imagination, could we give advice to people who want to explore like gender affirming sex or want to kind of even just open that up for themselves? Like, wait a minute, I've always had boobs, so therefore I've always felt like people should be able to touch boobs because that's part of sexual experience. And what if they're just hearing this and realizing like, wait a minute, what would that be like to take it out of the equation? And how can we put that idea into like physical practice? Like, what do we think that looks like?
So there are a couple of really phenomenal like templates. Some of our favorite resources. One is Scarlet Teen. So Scarlet Teen is like a sexual health resource that's geared toward teenagers. But most of our sexual, I would say like most people, when we're talking about sex, we talk about sex like seventh graders, because that's where our sex ed began and ended. So letting ourselves be childlike about this and like have it be a little bit fun and a little bit worksheety and like, kind of template-y, I think, would be really helpful.
Yeah.
Exactly. But Scarlet Teen has a really great, they have a really thorough yes, no, maybe list that includes gender stuff. I love a yes, no, maybe list because it takes a lot of the pressure off of the person to come up with the yeses, the nos, and the maybes. Mm. And we just have to check boxes that say yes, no, or maybe. And so in the Scarlet Teen yes, no, maybe list, it has like a list of body parts, and it's like, yes, it's okay to touch, no, it's not okay, or maybe, like, check in every time. And so we can talk about body parts. There's examples of names of body parts. Do you like to hear this? Do you not like to hear this? Right? Like, some people feel really empowered when they refer to their vulva as a cunt. Yeah. Right? For some people, that's like, fuck yeah. Some people, that makes them want to crawl inside their own skin and like never be perceived again, right? And so having these conversation starters and having these templates, I think, is a really helpful tool in making sure, again, that like the sex that you're having is within your comfort zone, within your like window of safety.
I think the weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from 30 doll hairs, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can like, I can dress them up, I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey. Confidants, sober girlies, are you looking to cut back or cut out alcohol this year? Come on, join me and Zach on our sober journeys. Recess Zero Proof craft mocktails are the perfect alcohol replacement. We've recreated the cocktails you know and love, like a lime margarita and a grapefruit paloma, so you can enjoy the flavors and feelings of those cocktails without the booze. That's right, zero proof, zero compromise. Listeners can get 15% off the Recess mocktail sampler at takearecess.com/Kelsey. Each can is lightly sparkling mocktail infused with functional ingredients like so many stress balancing adaptogens made with real fruit and only 25 calories or less. It's a guilt-free way to unwind.
Whether you're relaxing after work or hanging out with friends, make Recess Mocktails your drink between drinks or, like me, your forever mocktail. I am so obsessed with the ginger lime mule and also the grapefruit Paloma for spring. It's my favorite go-to weekend drink. Get 15% off Recess Mocktails now at takearecess.com/Kelsey so you can enjoy your favorite cocktails without the consequences. Like, we get so in our heads about this stuff, you know, like we forget that there's literally workshops, you know, like what you guys do, or spaces well, that can totally help you physically implement it. Otherwise it's just swirling around in these freaking meat sacks all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think that a lot of us as adults think that it's, you know, cheating or a cop-out to rely on something like a worksheet or a template. But again, if we think about the fact that our education, our toolkit on sexual communication, on sex and pleasure in general, is for the most of the time pretty lackluster, so relying on something like a worksheet or a template as this is becoming familiar to you, as you're like integrating it into your vocabulary and like into the way that you think, is a great tool to, again, take some of that pressure off and not have to hold so much in your brain all the time.
Anya Lasagna, were you going to add anything to that?
I was just going to add, adding to the, I mean, like a yes, no, maybe less is mostly used in a sexual context. And I would add, like, when it comes to names of body parts that you are comfortable with, like, what is that also outside of a sexual context? And are those different? Like, mm-hmm. like using the word pussy in a sexual context might feel completely different than outside of a sexual context.
Dang. Yeah, I've made too many assumptions about the word cunt for sure. Like, I for sure thought everyone was like, yes to cunt. And I tried to name one of my group chats with myself, Lord DIY, and Zach Kornfeld and Maggie.
Yes. Cutie, love them all.
Cutie cunts. And Lauren was like, abso-fucking-lutely not.
Nope.
Hard no. And I was like, what? I was so shocked. So I think we ended up on like coochie cuties or something. I don't know. I also don't know why Zach is whatever. Moving on. Okay.
Why he's in that group?
he gets louder than we do somehow. So what are you guys seeing is like the conversation around pleasure that is plaguing our generation the most?
Capitalism.
Ooh, what? Speak on it.
Exactly.
Excuse me? I mean, like, isn't it all back to capital? Like, I feel like
I mean,
it all...
yeah, it always is. It always
but
is.
Yes, always.
Just go
yes.
on.
Oh, yes. Okay, so, like, if you think about, like, capitalism and how that interferes in other contexts, like work... like you are always supposed to be productive. You're only valuable or worthy if you are doing these such things or doing 100%. You are like your purpose is to serve other people.
I see where
joy
you're
and,
going
and
with
happiness
this.
And pleasure like does not matter unless you deserve it or you have worked for it. It is not something that is like
a right.
like a right. Yes. Like so that's one of my favorite ways of like protesting and rioting capitalism is by like saying no to all of those things and prioritizing my own needs, prioritizing my pleasure, not doing things 100%, not giving things my all because my mental health is more important than that.
That's pretty powerful when you put it that way. I was like, wait, masturbating is a revolution? Like,
it is, okay?
Yeah, I've been doing it so casually since I could use my hands. I didn't realize that was – I feel very lucky, I guess. I feel very, like, lucky that I don't know. I can come a lot. I don't know. That's a very privileged thing to say, but I realize that that's like a huge thing. Like that is, I do feel very lucky in a lot of ways sexually. So what kind of advice do you give like your followers or your listeners or your watchers about kind of working through taking down capitalism through pleasure?
focusing on joy and pleasure, baby, and like bringing it back down to those basics. I think it's Emily Nagoski who has like the saying of like, pleasure is the measure. Like, it's not about like how many partners you have or how many times you orgasm or how hard you are or how wet you are. Pleasure is the measure. And so being able to maybe at the end of the day, like reflect on how often you experience pleasure and like how can you incorporate those things more into your life. And that doesn't have to be like anything sexual related. That's like, hey, I want to have a dance party in the morning to get ready for my day. I want to make sure that I'm listening to like music instead of like the news in the morning. These are my things. just off the top of my head. as I was getting ready to record this, doing some dancing, yes, taking my time, getting ready, ooh, making sure I had all my drinks in order.
I'm someone who at the end of the day has like 6 different cups in my, it's like, yep, I'm hydrated. My, yep, pee is crystal
clear. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, being, I think.
Oh, go ahead, Hannah.
No, it's all you.
Oh, I was just going to wrap that up by saying focus on the little things and incorporate them more into your life.
Yeah, like thinking about what feels good in our bodies, whether that's sexual or not, is something that capitalism has kind of forced out of us. Right? It says you don't get to feel good until you've done all your work, until everybody is satisfied, especially people who are socialized as women, mm-hmm, right? Because our job is to take care of everybody else. And then if we have anything left over, we get the crumbs. Mm. And we don't, we deserve more than crumbs.
Yeah, we deserve a whole ass cake.
Buy yourself flowers.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Make the goddamn, yeah, cake.
But make yourself a cake.
Don't tempt me.
This is like, yes, you can have your cake and eat it too, okay?
I mean, like,
the idea that...
You made me think about, like, is there such an... actually, I know this is true because, Hannah, I saw you doing a video about it. But, like, is there such a thing as, like, the overindulgence of the healing of trauma? And I saw something that you had said of, totally, like... Well, you can say it better if you want to, but it was something about like healing past the point to intellectualization isn't actually healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, my Lord and Savior, Adrienne Marie Brown, talks a lot about the importance of moderation. Mm. And when I think for a lot of us, when we hear moderation, that like comes with like the shackles of diet culture. Mm-hmm. But that's not what this is. When we talk about moderation, it's saying like we need balance in our lives so that we have time for to appreciate, mm, everything. So if we are going to therapy and we're doing the work and we're reading the self-help books and we're not giving ourselves a chance to sit back and reflect, mm, on all the work that we've done, then, or we're not giving ourselves a chance to like notice how it feels to have done all this work, then we're not healing in moderation, right? We're just like aggressively pursuing healing and it's probably not going to be as effective.
I'm writing that down.
We talk about pleasure, the necessity of moderation when it comes to pleasure. If you're having like 27 orgasms every, wow, day, right? Eventually, right, that's a lot. I don't know. If that's what you're doing, yeah, like good for you, but also I need an ice pack just thinking about that.
It seems like interruptive. Like, not much like time to do anything.
Yeah.
Right. It's, right, not actually pleasurable.
Exactly. Mm. It's not actually pleasurable. It starts to become work. It starts to become an obligation. And so if we think about, okay, pleasure happens in moderation, healing happens in moderation, work, the work that we do, like our 9-to-5s or whatever the hell our days are, that also happens in moderation, and that's important because it gives us a chance to have some kind of appreciation or some kind of perspective on all of the other parts. But yeah, I think it's also really hard because right now the way that social media is I can't open, like, my TikTok algorithm has been taken over by therapists and people being like, here's an ADHD hack. And I'm like, dude, I pay somebody to help me with this on a regular basis. I want to see cute dogs.
That's why I'm here. How did this happen?
I want to see cute dogs and hot people.
I just want to see hippo.
Yes, more hippo.
All I want is hippo. Okay,
honestly, I think I'm a dog and... now, whether I like it or not.
Good. Good. I'm jealous,
but
honestly.
I've learned here we have to practice balance. Because if it's just too much pleasure, then it's not pleasurable.
It's not pleasurable.
You might get
sick
of hippo.
Exactly.
I mean, very unlikely, but maybe.
I won't. But I have moderation because I don't live with
there
hippo.
You go.
So it's okay.
I mean, that's that's such a great way of putting it, too, with just like, I think a big question that I – get a lot whenever I do put out to the confidants, like, what kind of questions do you have for like our sex educator this week, is about sex drive too, and how, like, even with cishet relationships is different from like queer relationships, are different from marginalized body relationships. Like, it feels like also with the pandemic everything got out of norm. Not that there is a norm, but can you maybe speak to also just like how, and I think this was one of the questions, like how intimacy has even changed just now that we're more inclusive of pleasure and talking about pleasure?
Yeah. excuse me.
No worries.
So I think that, like, yes, we are reevaluating, like, pleasure and intimacy, especially, you know, the past couple of years through this pandemic. Yeah, like, sex, quote-unquote, drives have changed, and what gives you pleasure now might be different than what has given you pleasure, like, in the past. Like, a big thing that I noticed that changed for me was, like, beforehand I could watch Netflix all day and I was satisfied.
Yeah.
Now I can do like 1 hour and then I'm gonna be drained. So again, like, moderation, balance, do the things that give you pleasure and notice and practice mindfulness, and if they're no longer giving you pleasure, then change activities. So then when that comes to like intimacy too, like we talked about, like, redefining what sex means and making that more inclusive, like, that also can be done with intimacy as well. Like, intimacy can really mean anything and be anything. It doesn't have to be like anything sexual. And I think what you know, a lot of couples struggle with, like, they you know, they want to increase their sexual arousal and desire, but really what they're wanting is more intimacy, and intimacy is going to then lead to those two things. What is not going to lead to an increase in arousal and desire is figuring out why you are not experiencing the level of arousal and desire that you are now and comparing it to what you used to experience.
Yes, it's so unhealthy.
Like, oh yeah, like the comparing, the constant comparing, like, you have to be able to, like, just acknowledge and meet yourself where you are now and figure out a way to meet those needs, not the needs that you had in the past. Like, those are in the past. We're here now. So... yeah, redefining intimacy, like, that to me means, like, building, creating more moments of, like, connection and vulnerability and finding ways of feeling safe enough to be my most authentic self, which is, you know, for me, a child frolicking in a meadow. Like, that is what I want to feel every moment of the day and within every relationship. Like, I want to be that child. And I want to experience joy and pleasure in every moment. And being in a relationship where you feel that intimacy, when you feel truly seen and understood and accepted, like, that can be way, way scarier to survivors than any act of sex.
And like, if that is what intimacy feels like for you, like, focus on what brings you safety instead. Mm. And, you know, safety is subjective, right? Like, that's going to be different for everybody to define. Mm-hmm. And then you also have to be able to communicate that as well. And communicating it as, like, specifically, like, as you can is going to be, like, you know, essential for actually receiving the kind of safety and intimacy and sex that you are wanting. Mm. So figuring out what exactly that looks like to you, and being able to communicate that. I honestly don't remember what your question was, and
no,
but I even answered it.
Following you down the road, I was just like, yes, yes. I was yes-anding it. You answered the shit out of it. I want to ask, like, a complex question, and this wasn't on the Google Doc, so feel free, whoever wants to take it. But I'm going to give you, like, a scenario that I see happen often that comes up with, like, you know, friendships or life or group chats or, you know, the girls' nights or whatever, where – let's say a trauma happens in a relationship. It doesn't necessarily need to be like a sexual trauma between the two, but it's a life change, a death in the family, a mistrust, a infidelity. Like, it's something that affects one person more heavily than the other. And they can communicate, like, hey, you know, this trauma is affecting me right now where I don't feel, like, you know, connected to you or, you know, intimate. And is it safe to say, like, can that hurt and harm be on other people, or is it up to us to... I've gone way too convoluted with this question, but, like, is it possible?
I think I'm picking up
okay,
what you're putting
pick
down.
Pick it up
though.
And carry it home, please, because I went way weird.
Okay, so I'm just gonna put this into the context of the pandemic, because the pandemic is like a collective trauma that is impacting all of us in a lot of different ways. On any given day, I might be like really in my pandemic feelings, right? I might have, you know, my best friend's birthday is this week and her roommates just tested positive for COVID. And she doesn't, this is the third year in a row that she doesn't get to celebrate her birthday. And it just, like, really sucks. And it's really heartbreaking. And she's, like, quarantined. And it's shitty, right? So that, like, the trauma of existing in a pandemic is going to impact every single person in a different way. Where what I'm kind of hearing is, like, your question is, how does the responsibility fall in terms of, like, managing that and managing expectations?
Yeah.
Was I following that correctly?
Like, what if the partner or the person you're with isn't receptive to what you're communicating or you can't share it or you don't feel comfortable sharing it? Like, when is it time to, like, say this is unhealthy and I've been dealing with
me and
my things and trauma for too long and it's not being received? Like, where's the time that we go, like, okay, this isn't, like, a bad thing. It's just not, no one's moving forward in our healing.
Right. I think that is a question that really involves, like, those are the questions that pay my bills, if I'm being perfectly honest. Like, those are the questions that bring people into therapy and say, hey, like, this is how I feel. What part's my responsibility? What's part someone else's responsibility? In relationships, like, okay, in my partnership, I'm a sexual violence survivor. And where my responsibility is in communicating how that impacts my relationship with my partner is I can communicate and say, hey, this doesn't feel safe for X, Y, and Z reasons, and it's on my partner to respect that. If I am, like, you know, asking my partner to make accommodations that are outside of a boundary, if I'm asking him to make accommodations that don't feel safe for him, that, like, are, you know, impacting both of us in certain ways, like, that's when we get to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. That's when we get to talk about, this is, we call this relational accountability. Mm-hmm. So every time I enter a relationship, romantic or otherwise, I bring my whole bubble of my life experiences and my trauma and my worldview and my this and my that. And that other person also brings their bubble. And the challenge is to figure out what exists in the Venn diagram of those bubbles. And so if what I'm asking to put in the Venn diagram, say like, okay, I need you to... you can't sneak up on me in the kitchen because it's triggering for me.
Check.
Right?
Box for me too.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Like if I have my headphones in, you can't like tap me on the shoulder because I'm gonna freak out, right? That's an accommodation that I'm asking for. That sounds pretty reasonable. But if I was gonna say, hey, I'm feeling kind of jumpy. I need you to always do all of the grocery shopping. And I am just going to like stay home and I'm going to like ask you to do things that are, you know, maybe out of reason. I don't know. I couldn't think of a good example. Realistically, we always get to have these conversations. We don't have to decide right away. I feel like now I'm the one who's getting lost in the weeds.
No, it's you nailed it though. Like, it's complex and it's
complex.
Often when you're someone in a partnership, it's like a two-party system, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like there is only so much that we can do on our part as communicators and hope that it's received or that someone's willing to grow with us through that, you know, self-awareness or
And I think a really important thing to keep in mind is that if somebody isn't willing to meet that, like if someone isn't willing to, you know, make an accommodation that we really need, it's not inherently personal, mm-hmm. right? It might be that that person is unable to meet your needs and that's not about you. It's about, I don't have the capacity for that right now. And I think that's where a lot of people, especially in like romantic partnerships, especially right now, because the time that we spend with our partners has just like skyrocketed, especially if we live with them. So that's where maybe it can be helpful to implement something like a standing weekly check-in to say, hey, what's working, what's not working, what feels good, what was something I did this week that made you feel really supported and held, what's something that happened this week that made you feel kind of icky, what can we do better next time? And if those things like check-ins and, you know, having those intentional conversations isn't enough, then that's a really great reason to seek out a therapist, right? To say, hey, we want to make this work, but we're having trouble building the systems that work for us. Maybe it's time to outsource that. Maybe it's time to add somebody to our care team so that they can help us build the system. So again, that's not all on us.
It sounds so like obvious to me because I've been in therapy and couples therapy for so long.
But it's not.
That's not a language a lot of people have and use. And I think that's so important to reiterate and like just platform and showcase. And that's what you guys are doing.
Yeah. And it's also like the partner's responsibility that like when a need is communicated, that you check in with yourself and you acknowledge how much you are able to give and provide in that moment. Like, I want to be there. I want to listen. I don't have all the spoons for that right now, but here's what I can do. Here's how I can support you. I can go get you flowers, or I can like order you food, or I can rub your feet, or I can leave you alone. That partner's responsibility to also set boundaries.
Make sure
that they are not giving too much.
Yes. And I feel like something you guys said that I'm going to start implementing too is like, when I do tell people I can't have space for even, you know, a tough conversation or like an emotional thing, that it isn't personal. Cause I feel like that was a piece you just said that stuck with me, that I was like, oh yeah, shit, we do take everything so fucking personally. That's just human nature. We can't help but take things so personally. And I think it would just make everyone's anxiety chill out a little bit more if that little piece was added. So gosh, guys, I can't believe we've already come to our conclusion, but I know you guys give so many workshops that I definitely want to attend. I want the confidants to attend because there's such good, juicy information there. So tell us, where can
come hang out with us.
Where can the confidants find you? What kind of workshops do you guys give?
So we have one coming up in a few weeks. It is a 7-week-long group for sexual trauma survivors. And each week we will be focusing on building community and reclaiming pleasure, learning how to work with our trauma responses, you know, healthy sexual communication, reconnecting with your body, all that fun stuff.
Love.
and
it is honestly like, it kind of sounds intimidating, but it is really fun.
Which is why we also broke it down into 7 weeks because it's a lot of information. Yeah,
sure. Right.
It's
hard. That's not day one.
Right. So, and if you miss this one that's coming up in a few weeks, we do also facilitate this one frequently. So make sure that you are following us to stay up to date on workshop announcements. And we are at pleasure_collective.
Yay! Well, Anya like lasagna and Hannah like banana. You guys are awesome. I thank you for all the good work that you are doing. I will definitely have those linked below, Confidants, so you can definitely check them out.
Make awesome. Sure to
check out Pleasure Collective. I almost said Pleasure Collective. I don't know. Maybe that's like a side brand for you guys.
maybe that's our like Sasha Fierce, right? You know?
Your Pleasure Collective.
Our alter ego.
Exactly. Just spelled wrong. Confidants, thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to follow those links below. Subscribe if you're not already. And give this 5 stars on iTunes because that really helps. And if it's not 5 stars, please don't give it at all because I am very sensitive. Anya and Hannah, thank you guys so much. Confidants, we will see you guys next week.
Thanks for having us.
Loved doing this with you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure.